We are now at the sixth of our series of lectures here in Owerri in Nigeria. And the title for today, this morning, is Value and Love Determine Success in My Life. Value and Love Determine Success in My Life. This afternoon, we're going to work with techniques for value, techniques for working on values and love to better my life. So, this afternoon we'll have about one, two, three, four, five, maybe five or more techniques. That should be kind of interesting. So for now, value and love determine success in my life. Our values determine what sort of a world we're going to be in. The values of people are the same all over the world, whether we can recognize it or not. Cultural values, you say, are different, but there's a universal value, and that universal value is survival. Everyone wants to survive. Everyone wants to live. No matter what country you're in, if you hurt somebody, they say, stop it. They say, don't hurt me. If you take away their privileges, they say, stop it, don't take away my privileges, even though it's privileges unique to that country. Everywhere we go, our values are based on the same things. What are the values that you have, and that your right as a human being to express yourself, your right as a human being to have a family, your right as a human being to have your values appreciated? The World Organization, and I believe it's probably the UNO and the United Nations organizations, they want to go around the world insisting that people's values be honored, and people's values be approved, people's values be recognized. But in the process, they oftentimes try to make people's values what their values are. And because they do that, they do not do a good job. Now, you can readily understand that the values of a child and the values of an adult are somewhat different. A child and an adult respond to life differently. A child responds to life with more abandonment and with more ability to just be frivolous and have fun, whereas an adult usually takes responsibility. Now, the values are all going to be the same, true, but the way that a child responds to values and the way an adult responds to values are two different things. So if you're going to work with children on values, you have to understand how they respond to values. What values make them happy? What values turn them on? Now, true, whatever is beautiful and good is going to be a value that turns people on. Whatever is desirable and magnificent is a value that's going to make people feel life is worthwhile. But if you ever violate values, even those that they think are right, then you're in trouble. Many people in the world look at other cultures and they say, those cultures are so strange and they're certainly wrong. People look at the Polynesian people who wear abbreviated costumes and who live in a very simple way, and they say, that's not right. They should have more facilities. They should have kitchens, and they should have running water, and they should have all, although they don't want it. As you keep telling me here in Nigeria, again and again and again, you love this country. If you had a chance to go to another country, you wouldn't want to go. You wouldn't want to go out of your own country because it has your values. It has your way of looking at things. It has your feeling of friendliness. But you go into another country and you have to build up friendliness. But you build it up on their values and not on your values. And because you're not building it up on your values, you're losing out. You're losing out the opportunity to have it all be so perfect and so good for yourself. Now, do you want to be master of your values? Well, then you have to learn what your values are. What are your values here in Nigeria? What is your value for right and wrong? What if a person wants to take your money and you don't want to give it to them? What is your value on that? You say, hey, that's my money. You can't take that. I would say that's a value all over the world. A person says, hey, I want to steal your wife. And you say, not on your life. My wife is my wife, and I love her, I'm keeping her, and I have that value, and no way is anyone going to come along and steal my wife. And throughout all time, that's the thing. But consider what's going on. Consider what's going on. What are your real values? Your real values are where you are touched in your heart. You're touched in your inner self. People who are aware of their inner values can never be walked over, can never be hurt. People who have values of appreciation for themselves and others are always living a good and beautiful life. And they're living a good and beautiful life because of one thing. They are successful with their values. They stay with their values. They know what they are. Now, many people don't really know what their values are. You take children of a Muslim family, and you take these children of a Muslim family, and you talk to them, and then you tell them, okay, now, this is what we do. Every home that we talk about has one father and one mother. You don't have more than one. And the children says, well, we do. And, well, that's interesting, you know. And you'd say that women do not have to wear cloths over their head. Well, my mommy does. You know, my sister does. They have to do it. You see, these are ways, customs, these are values that these people have. Now, is it up to us in any time, in any way, to invade those values and try to make them change them? Are we supposed to go around the world changing other people's values? Or do we learn to make our own values all the more wonderful and all the more positive and all the more beneficial to us? If that's what we do, then we're in a good shape. Then we're in a good case. How do you want to make your own values more valuable to you? Well, live it. Live your value. Live what you believe. Don't go around trying to change other people to your values. Live what you believe. Are you such a wonderful, desirable person that people want to be like you? If you are such a desirable person that people want to be like you, then you know your values are good. I've met so many of Sam's friends here. And all the people that I've met who are Sam's friends are people who respect Sam right all the way across the board. They feel that if they dealt with Sam, they'd be dealing with a very noble and a wonderful person. If they had Sam offered advice to them in their program, it'd be advice that'd be sound and good to follow. And they call Sam in and ask him questions. They call him for his help. Now, why does he have this special credit? Why does he have this special appreciation? Because Sam lives what he believes. He lives what he thinks is right for him. And because he lives what he thinks is right for him, sometimes he gets in a little trouble. And the trouble that he gets into is when people say, that's not what I believe, and I don't think you should believe with that either. And Sam merely says, that's what I believe, and I stand for it. I stand for what I believe. Now, true, he hasn't been in any big fights recently. He hasn't been in any big discussions lately with people who didn't agree with him. But primarily, because everybody knows where he stands. It's just like our friend Obama. Everybody knows where he stands, so no one disagrees with him. Everybody says, I know what you're after. I know where you're going. I support you. I support your values. I support your direction. And that's what people say to Sam. I support your values. I support your direction. Now, what do they say to you? Do they say to each one of you, I know your values, or I don't know your values? What are your values? And you say, well, it's obvious. My values are my country, my church, my state, my God. And they say, well, what do you mean your God? You know, You mean the God of the Islams, the God of the Christians, the God of the Hindus? What God are you talking about? I'm talking about God in me. Oh my, is that a strange one, talking about God inside of you. And they would feel very unsure of you. But if you go around with confidence, feeling that what you believe and what you know is correct, you'll stand forth in any circle, and be able to say, yes, I am God, and you are God, we are all God, there's nothing else but God in this universe. And if you got a problem with that, sorry about that. That's your problem, not mine. Because everyone in this universe is God. Everybody in this universe is fantastic and glorious and wonderful. Now, can you handle that? Can you handle that everyone in this universe is fantastic and glorious and wonderful, and that everyone is God? So you talk to another person, and they are a little different in God. They have a little different attitude. And you say, that's not the way God in me responds. God in you responds a little differently. God in me responds this way. Well, when you get down to values, the real values, they're all exactly the same. Nobody wants to be hurt. Nobody wants to hurt anybody else. Nobody wants to take from anyone. No one wants to do anything that's going to be unhappy for anybody else. Everybody wants a smile. What is it, a smile? You get a smile from somebody, and everybody says, oh, it must be okay. You have people say happy things about each other. Oh, it must be okay. Well, you say, Herb, the values you're talking about are not very intensive values. They're not very deep or steep values. They're rather surface. What is all this about? Well, that's what our values are all about. Our values are just on the surface. Our deeper value, what we really live by, you don't even know what that is. Others don't even know what that is. No one really knows what their true values are. And the reason is that we want to misinterpret the word. We misinterpret the word value by saying that value is something that can be understood. And value is not something that can be understood. What are your values? And you say, well, I like me, I like other people. You see, now how can you value that? How can you understand I like me? How can you understand I like other people? How can you understand those ideas? You can't. You can't understand them, and the reason you can't understand them is because they are universal. They are universal, and they are true for everybody. And they're true for you, and true for everybody. And that's really quite exciting. Now, are you ready to live a life with values that are true and good for you and universal for you? Are you ready to do that? If you are, then you stand up for who you are. Now, who are you? Are you a beautiful soul? Are you a beautiful person? Are you a lovely being? Are you standing up for that? Are you standing up for the fact that you believe that you are God? You believe that everybody's God? You believe that this is a good world? You believe that this is a world filled with wonderful people? You are so firm in your belief, you will not allow yourself to read a newspaper or a magazine or a television that says that anything is bad in this world. You say, well, I'm not a good citizen if I don't do that. Well, yes, you are. You're a good citizen if you will read whatever you read and instantly interpret it to say, I surround you with my pure white light of love, all is in divine order. Instead of saying, oh my goodness, that's terrible, you know. But if you look at a story, and the story talks about torture or hurting other people, it talks about bad government or something, and then you just say, oh, that's terrible, bad government. You're part of the problem. You're part of the problem of bad government. The moment you see something like that that says the government is bad at this point, you immediately put a new cause in motion, and you immediately say, the government is wonderful, the government's beautiful. You say, well, that's lying to yourself. That's not facing the facts. That's not being realistic. Well, no, that's not being realistic to the world's view. Now, do you want to live in the world's view, or do you want to live in your view? Do you want to live in the view of somebody else, or do you want to live in the view of your own divine self? Is God good? Yes, God is good. Is God a good creator? Yes, God's a good creator. Does God create everything good and say all is good and very good? Yes. Can we do any less? Do you think God reads newspapers? Do you think God reads newspapers and looks at the happenings in the newspapers and says to himself, oh, that's terrible. Those people are hurting each other. That's a war. That's terrible. You think God thinks that? He couldn't. That'd be judgment, wouldn't it? And if God cannot judge, how much more we cannot judge? You know? How much more we cannot judge? We want to learn to be non-judgmental. We want to learn to be unconditionally loving. Unconditionally loving. Love everybody, even the people that we think are bad. And if you love the people you think that are bad, what's going to happen to them? They will melt into their goodness. They have to. Think about that. When you think about people who are bad and you love them, they melt into their goodness. Because the goodness is there. The goodness is there, it's just that they haven't been exercising it. But you are wise enough to handle that, and you are wise enough to be aware of that. Now, Mr. O.K., you have walked in and out of this room 8 times now in the last 20 minutes. And that is very distracting. Okay. I'm looking at you. Don't look at her. She's nothing. She's another person. She's staying here and being a good girl. But now, you're walking in and out and distracting the attention from all the rest of our students here. And that's not very nice. Now, if you were up here speaking, and you had someone who's walking in and out all the time while you were speaking, you'd find that very distracting yourself. Now, I find it distracting for the students, not for me. And for you. Put your office work down, put your other things down, and pay attention to what we're saying here. You might learn something very beautifully. You might learn something that could be very helpful in your office, very helpful in your family. Perhaps there's a time in your family when there's a distress and you learn how to handle it because we're talking about those issues here. This is very important for all of us. If you feel that you go to a meeting and you got a right to get up and down during the meeting, you're distracting everybody. You're being very discourteous to everybody, especially the speaker, but to everybody. And you're being very discourteous to yourself. Because why bother to come if you're not going to stay and hear the talk? Why bother to come to a meeting if you're going to go walking in and out and just be a disturbance to everybody? And if you have a cell phone and you come to a meeting like this, shut it off. The call that you miss while you're sitting in this meeting cannot be very significant. Because anybody who calls you while you're here calls you because you have let them know that you're available. And if you shut off your phone, no big deal. You turn it on and you got a call listing, you know who called. If you want to call them back, you do. And half of them you don't call back because you don't want to call back. But respect yourself. Respect yourself. That's very important. I'm not a very nice person. I speak right out when things come to my face. And I talk about them. And I share them. And I tell people this right away. And I do this whether we're in Lugano or in Switzerland or in New York or California. It doesn't matter where I am. Whether it's in Nigeria here, I speak right out and say it. Now, some people may say, that's not very nice of you, Herb. You're being very unkind to them. You know, they're not used to having people do that. Well, maybe they should. Maybe they should. Okay. Do you know who you are? Yeah. Who are you?
I am God.
Very good. Okay. Now, is God, as any God, are you as God, somebody who wants to disturb the rest of your friends?
No.
No. Okay, so let's take that in mind and know that, because that's part of our values of living. We want to be respectful for our fellow man and be a blessing to our fellow man. Now, okay, we'd probably go and give people money to help them because they were starving or because they were destitute. But would he give you the opportunity to put your one-pointed attention on a program, or would he feel that he should go in and out all the time and disturb you? Now, I'm using him as an illustration, and I'm overkilling a little bit, but I want the idea to come across to you. That's very important. Very important. I love all of you with all my heart. I would give you my life if you asked for it. But I'm not creating anybody asking for my life. I will give you everything that I have. But all I expect is that you just quietly listen and respectfully listen and ask your questions. And I say, write them down, please, so that I can read them and tell them back to you. But every one of you, you're here talking to me. I mean, you're not in this organization, in this seminar, because you're an ordinary person. All of you are extraordinary people. That's why you're here. You're not here because you're a normal, ordinary person. Even you, young person. Yeah. Every one of us are extraordinary people. Now, what are we going to do with that extraordinary self that we are? Well, we're going to say, my name is Obama. I am President of the United States. You say, well, that's silly. I cannot be Obama President. That's true. What is your name?
Lucky.
Loud so I can hear it.
Lucky.
My name is Lucky. I am President of the United States. What happens when you say, I'm President of the United States? Immediately, your shoulders go back, your chin goes up. You feel proud of yourself, right? Right, Lucky? Yeah, okay. Lucky says, well, I'm not president. Well, you never will be until you get your chin up there and your shoulders back and start saying, I am president. Or maybe of Nigeria, you know? Or whatever. Or your company. Or yourself. Are you master of yourself? Yes. Yes, I am, and that's true. When you are master of yourself, you have pride in yourself, you consider yourself, and you consider all the things you do very carefully and very lovingly and very, very wonderfully. Now, if you don't do that, then you may be a winner for a moment, but it won't stay there. Now, what makes Endless so successful with his company? Endless is successful with his company because he doesn't care about the company. He cares about the people who work for him in the company. He cares about what the company can do. He cares about how he greets the people, how he helps the young people who want to learn how to run computers and other things that he offers to do. See, he is interested not how much money the company can make for him, and it will make a lot of money for him in the, as time goes on, because he is open for that. But he is giving his best to his idea, to his ideal. Now, what is your ideal? What is it that we teach in the university here? What is it we teach in the Villa of God Unlimited? We teach that we are worthwhile beings. We teach that we are creators of our world. We teach that we can speak our word. And when we speak our word, marvelous, wonderful, fantastic things happen, you know? Now, do you think that the group next door is teaching the same thing? No, because they have different purposes. They have different ideals. We are teaching this ideal because we don't want any credit for ourselves. We only want to see the world as beautiful as it is. And it starts with us. We begin to see the world beautiful, and the world will be beautiful for us and for everyone. Because then we will expect everyone in the world to act beautiful. We'll expect everyone in the world to be beautiful. We'll expect everyone in the world to express beauty in everything they do. And that's true. That's true. But we cannot say that we are like our neighbors. We are like ourselves. We are unique, beautiful, fantastic beings that have a great deal of magnetism, a great deal of love to project into the world. Now, can you attract your good to yourself?
Yes.
Please?
Yes.
No. Why do I say no? Your good already exists. It is not something you attract to yourself. You create yourself recognizing that you already have your good, whether it be a car, a computer, a house, a wife, or whether it be money or anything. You do not attract anything to you. Because if you say, I attract something to me, you're saying, I don't have it. You follow me? If you say you don't have it, you never will have it. But if you say, I reveal it in my experience, then you're saying that it is already there, and you're merely revealing it in your experience. Now that's a big difference, subtle, but big difference. And the word attract is such a lovely word, you know. The secret uses attract, and many other activities and people use the word attract. But they believe that there's a God outside of them. And that God outside of them is going to give them what they want in their life. And if you believe that there's a God outside of you, well, then you need to attract it. That's true. But if you believe that the divine in you is the source of everything, and that you here in the center of your own being, you are the creator of your world. You are the creator of any experience you have. You're the creator of all that's going on in this universe. When you realize that, then you start having it happen. All Sam's life, he's just been creating, creating, creating. He knows he's good. Sam knows he's fantastic. Sam knows that all the world turns to him and expects him to give a very significant answer. Sam knows all the big and the little people. Sam knows them all, and they all love him. They don't love him because Sam can give them something. They love Sam because he is something. Now, you, too, choose to be somebody who is something. Now, okay here, he would like to run for different positions on his government. And as he'd like to run for positions on his government, he tries to show the government that he can do these things. Well, the government doesn't care whether he can do these things or not. The government puts people in positions that they don't know how to handle all the time. That's the standard thing they do. What the government wants is somebody who believes in themselves 100% that they can do anything they choose to do. Now, who in this room do you know who's like that? Well, Sam and OK. These are two people who believe they can do anything they want. Now, Sam lives it, and he goes out, and people come to him all the time. OK goes out, and he feels he's got to go and reel them in. All OK has to do is just lift up his chin, stick out his chest, and say, okay, world, here I am. What would you like me to do? Would you like me to run the joint? Would you like me to be your tax collector? Would you like me to be your bill maker? Would you like me to... What do you want me to do? I'm ready. I can handle anything. Plus my business, plus my family, plus my world. I am a man for all seasons. I can do... Is that all right?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
I didn't hear it very well.
Yes!
Yes! Yes! You see, you want to get that enthusiasm there. Now, why is he a man for all seasons? He can speak up. Why is Peter a man for all seasons? Because Peter can speak up. Peter was a mouse for a long time here. Peter didn't speak up very well in my presence. And I would say, Peter, what are you doing here? What are you doing? And Peter would not even help me. Now, in this seminar, Peter has been a wonderful bulwark to me, standing up and interpreting when other people talk like little mice. And Nini, isn't it? Nina? She was talking to me, and she was talking like a mouse, and I said, please talk louder. And I said, you know how to talk louder. Oh, yes, I know how to talk louder. Well, please do. Please do. You know? And so she started doing that. And then the minute other people came around, she started to be a little mouse again because she was afraid of them. She's afraid of everybody in her world, that somebody's going to be not nice to her, that somebody's going to take away her money, somebody's going to take away her experiences. I mean, she is such a positive. Did you ever shake hands? Did you ever hug her? My goodness, she's a dynamo. You hug her and you're hugging strength, power, and majesty. Not just a woman. But the thing is, this is what we need to do. We need to all recognize that we are strength, power, and majesty, and that the world wants us. Not because they know it, but because we create that. We create that. They come into our presence and they say, let's see, who shall we appoint to be the chairman? You. Well, why do they point to you like that? Because you're showing signs of being the chairman. You're showing leadership. You're showing mastership. You know, like Obama's charisma. It just shines out like 4th of July. and bright and clear and bang, bang, bang. And everybody says, yes, yes, that's the man, that's the man. That's the man we want. Right, Tim? That's the man we want. And great. Now, we'll have to invite him to come here to our meeting. I wonder what kind of a crowd he would draw. Wouldn't that be a fun time? But this is what you are. Your charisma, your values, what you believe about yourself, what you believe about your world, this is what creates for you your attitude, which allows you to create whatever circumstance you want. Obama didn't get to be where he is because he wished and wanted. He got to be where he is because he believed in himself, and he also was pretty sharp. Now, is there anybody in this group who is not intelligent? No, you're all very wise. Is there anyone in this group who needs help? No. All of you are very sensitive, very capable, very prosperous. Is there anyone in this group that needs to learn how to have children? Well, considering that some of you have 10, 11, 12 children, I would say no. You know how to have children. And yes, Endless. Endless says, I want to learn about that. I want to have children. I want to have a lot of children in my home. Just remember, Endless, having children may be a sign of wealth or something like that. But what you want to do is to be so good yourself, so remarkable yourself, that everywhere you go, you're a blessing to everybody. And when you speak to any child, you give them your love and your confidence. And that child will take that gift that you give them, and they do not even have to know you. They will take that gift. He said something nice about it. He said, I'm going to be a famous man. He said, I'm going to be an astronaut. And, you know, it doesn't matter. They want that approval. They want that support. They want that condition, which they don't get anywhere else. Their parents said, nobody in this family has ever done anything important. Nobody in this family has ever been worth a hill of beans. Nobody in this family is any good. Well, now, who needs to be in a family like that? If that's what your family was or is, it's up to you now to start doing a little bit of praise work. Not praise God outside yourself. Praise the Lord. You know, you want to do praise work to the individual. Did you ever think of going to your father, your mother, your sister, your brothers, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, your grandmothers and grandfathers, any one of them or all of them, and say to them, I'm sure glad you're my grandfather. You sure brought good genes into our family budget, and I'm so happy. You are such a wise man. Genes and wisdom is not necessarily true. You're such a wise man. I'm so happy you're my grandfather. And you know what the guy's going to say? Yes, I am too. And you know what he's going to do? From that moment forward, he's going to do his best to help you. He's going to go around promoting you to everybody in his world. He's going to say, you know that son of mine or that grandson of mine or whatever role you're playing, he's very capable. Very capable. All he did was give you a compliment, you know. But that's when it counts. You raised yourself in his esteem. And he began recognizing that his family was a pretty good family. And that anybody in his family who wanted to do something deserved to have all the support that could be given. And so, he's going around wherever he goes, and he doesn't say, oh, you got to do this. He just said, my grandson, he is so sharp. He is so capable. He is such a genius. That's enough. And the next place he goes, he says, do you know, my grandson, he's got 12 children, and yet he makes sure each child gets attention from him every day. He doesn't just go out and have babies. He goes out and he has people. His children are little people, each one deserving attention from him every day. Each one deserving the feeling that their father really cares about them. They're not just part of the herd, not just part of the fallout, but they're someone that their father really cares about. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to be something. They're going to be something. They're going to go out and prove to themselves what they are by. But first they have to believe in themselves if they're going to prove to themselves that they are some. They can have all the values in the world. And the values that can be so good. But if they don't get out and express that, If they don't turn on their charisma and let the world see how beautiful they are, the world will never call them in to take the role they should take. But you as a member of that family, can go around praising the members of the family. Not obsequiously, not kissing their feet, but you go around praising the members of the family gently and lovingly. You just say, well, Sam, you certainly are a wonderful guy. And Sam says, thank you. Now, I go away and say other things. And then Sam is talking to Seville, and Sam says, you know, that Herbie is a nice guy. Now, why do you say he's a nice guy? Well, just a nice guy. I don't know why. He's just a nice guy. He doesn't know that he likes me because I like him. He doesn't know he likes me because I'm a good guy or that I said something nice to him. I said something nice to him, and he completely forgot that, but he felt good inside. You follow me? He felt good inside. And he doesn't know where that goodness came from, and we don't need to know. But he felt good. Now, if you go around and do that to every member of your family consciously, what a blessing you bring to yourself. What a blessing you bring to your world. If you're going to go around thinking that everybody in your world is trying to take advantage of you, well, then they will. Because you've got that big badge out here saying, I'm ready to have somebody take advantage of me. Come and knock me over. That's what you say. And if you don't say it in fact, you say it in your thought. Oh, poor me. Oh, poor me. I can't do anything by myself. What happens when people are like that? Somebody wants to come in and help them. And in the process, they help them with their bank balance, their checkbooks, and everything else like that. Be real careful. Know what you're doing. Put a cause in motion that you're going to bless your entire family, and you're going to you're going to point out to each member of your family how wonderful they are. Point out to each member of your family how beautiful they are. Not a lot of words, just simple little words. I have a number of men that I'm dealing with who are in prison. And they've abandoned their family by going to prison. You say, well, they're abandoning their family, well, if they hadn't done what they did, they would have stayed home with their family. But they abandoned, and so their kids say they abandoned them. And the mother says it to the children, your father abandoned us, he went to prison. He was a bad man, And so the children don't get to know their father. So the father says, what am I going to do? I said, well, here's what you do. Every day you write a note to one of your children or your wife or anybody in your family. Write a little note, one little paragraph, maybe 3-4 lines, and say, I remember when we were walking down the street that night, and you said to me, Grandpa, what do I do here? And I just said to you what I felt in my heart, and you said, Grandpa, that's the most wonderful thing anyone ever said to me. And I remembered that, and it made me very happy. Remembering you and being with you makes me very happy. You're a good guy. And bye. Maybe 4 or 5 lines, short, one paragraph, so to speak, and mail it to them. Once a week, go to each of your children, each of your grandchildren, each of your wives, to your wife, and to whomever you have in your family, and send them a little note. I mean, you're in prison. You can't go home. You're in prison. You're limited in what you can do. So you take a piece of paper, and you write on it. And sometimes when you're in prison, you don't even have paper. So you have to take some toilet paper. So you write a letter to your family on toilet paper, and they know you really mean it. To do that, that takes a lot of courage to believe in yourself, to send a note on toilet paper. Well, you, each one of you, are so pure and so beautiful and so fantastic in every possible way. You're masters. And I wouldn't call you masters if you didn't fit the ticket. Now, I want you to demonstrate your mastership to the world by telling the world, under every circumstance you can, how much you delight in them, how much you appreciate them. Now, I don't know what you think about dogs and cats and stuff like that, but every time I see a dog or a cat, I feel I have to get down and pet them. I have to look at them and say, well, how are you today? You know, real smiley and real happy and sad. And the dog wiggles his tail and comes to me and wants to lick my face and wants to do all these things. And I say, great, how are you today? It's for you. How are you today? And they love it. They love it. You go to my big golden retriever, Rex, and you say to Rex, Rex, you're a good guy. And his tail will go wum, 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 and anything in the way goes flying. Because he's such a fantastic guy. Now, he doesn't understand what you said. He doesn't have the slightest idea what you said. You're speaking in any language you want, and he doesn't. But he understands your intention. He understands your heart. He reads from your mind and your heart and your being. You deal with a tiger from the jungle, and the tiger doesn't speak English, you know. He doesn't speak any language. He only speaks the language of fear or love. He speaks the language of trust or lack of trust. And you too are that way. So now, as you go around to your family, give each member of your family a feeling of trust from yourself, a feeling of love from yourself. And as you do that, they will respond with love back in a way that you may never have even thought. Maybe not that instant. You might just say to somebody, like your nephew is visiting or something, you say, wow, you're quite a kid. I'm so proud of you. And then go away. Don't embellish it. Don't talk about it. Because the kid doesn't really know what you're thinking. He doesn't really know what you're saying he's so proud of, and you don't either. And so the kid's going to go away and think, what was it that my uncle was proud of about me? What was it? Well, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. Maybe he's just proud of me. And that kid is going to try to live up to that pride that you have in him, even though he has no idea what it is. Do you understand that? It's so simple. It's so gentle and so lovely. I go into stores and I say to the people, well, you certainly are a smiley person. You must really like life. Your customers, and these are parts of conversation, your customers must think you are the greatest waitress in the whole store. Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. And your customers must shower you with tips. Pretty good, you know. Your customers must really appreciate it. But by the time I'm done with them, they're giving me four or five cups of coffee, and they're going back and getting extra things. They're taking from other people's milkshakes, and you know, they make a big milkshake and they pour a glass full, and then that's all. And then there's half the milkshake left, and they bring that to me. Now, isn't that nice? You say, well, you're cheating. No, no, they're going to throw it out. They bring it to me because they want to say thank you for being who they are, not for being who I am. I do compliment them and talk to them in that way, but just for being who they are. And that's great. That's a great way to be. Now, as I say, you have the opportunity with your family, with your friends, all the people in your world, little by little, to just comment on their life in a positive, joyful way. Don't stick your nose into how they do things, because that's none of your business. How you do things is your business. How they do things is their business. You stick your nose in their world only insofar as when you see them being something you commend and appreciate, you say, you're wonderful. My goodness, you certainly know how to handle that. You really are a wizard with these things. I feel like I'd like to sit at your feet and learn a little bit, you know, because you know, you do that so beautifully, so innocently, so gently. And you know, they become your best friends. They become people who honor you and respond to you. But the main thing that you have done is you become your own best friend. Because instead of looking for people's faults, you're looking for people's good. Instead of looking for people's faults, you're looking for the beauty in them, and the harmony in them, and the joy in them. Now, I look at Mabel over here, and I think to myself, wow, you're a teacher. And you've been teaching for many years. And you have students from all over the world that you've taught. They come into your class, not just because of a particular ethnic value or something, but they come in your class because they come from everywhere. And so when they come in your class, you speak to them your Nigerian dialect, and they look at you and they say to themselves, what is this gobbledygook? And then you turn on your heart and they say, oh, but she's a nice lady. And they tolerate you, and they tolerate you. And then you say to yourself, these people do not know any Nigerian dialect. These people do not know poorly spoken English. They're coming from India, or they're coming, well, that should be English. They're coming from Pakistan. That should be English too. They come. Where do they come from? That's not English. So they come from Germany or Italy or something like that. And as they hear you talk, they say, what is that, Missy? What is that? What is that, Missy? And you realize you're not getting across to them. So you think to yourself, I want to get across to my students. And the best way for me to get across to my students is to speak so clearly that they understand it. Not, this is the way we do things. And that's intensive. That's where you're going after them, you know, not very kindly. But you say, this is the way we do things. And you are going to show me how well you can do it, because you are so good. And articulating, speaking clearly words, speaking clearly sentences, speaking clearly all the things that you're projecting. But first, you have to slow yourself down. I told you, I spoke like a steam train, going brrrr, just so quick and so much because I had so much to say. And then I realized people weren't getting what I had to say because I spoke too fast. So I began speaking slower, and making sure that I chose what was important and what I had to say. I didn't have to have them know everything I said, only the things that I thought were important. And little by little, people used to invite me to speak before their classes because I articulated so well. Because my articulation, my voice control and so on was what they wanted to have. And I was really honored that they chose me, but they didn't realize what they were doing. Because I can only speak one language, and that's the language of love. And so as I speak to these children, I'm saying, you are unconditional love. You look at your friends, you look at your neighbors, and you see them all beautiful. You look at the world, and you see war in the world, and you say, hey, there now is peace on earth, and it began with me. That's a song that's very common. And so I do that with these people, these kids. And you know what happens? Before you know it, the teacher says, go on, keep talking. I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to go about my business. And the teacher says, no, keep talking. The class is interested. They're listening to you. They're paying attention. You know, keep telling them all this good stuff. You, when you live what you believe, you too will be talking in areas that you never thought you'd talk. You go in the bar, and you're talking with your fellows there, and they're talking about all sorts of topics that are rather negative. And you say, you know, every thought I think brings a result in my life. And they say, what's all this about? Well, every thought I think brings a result in my life. And when I think good thoughts, I get good results in my life. When I think bad thoughts, I get bad results in my life. Oh, the world's against me and all. No. The world's not against me. The world is with me because I am thinking the kind of thoughts the world wants to be with. I'm thinking the kind of thoughts that I'm creating the world liking. Well, one or two episodes in the bar like that, and you will have all of them eating out of your hat. Because those people really want to know the truth. They really want to live dynamic and powerful and beautiful lives, just like you are. But they haven't had the ability to do it, because they didn't believe in themselves. And you, by planting the few little seeds that you plant with these people, they will start believing in themselves. And when they start believing in themselves, then what you have done is to spread out your seed planting far beyond wherever you planted them. These people you meet in one place, they go to all the other places they go to. Their homes, they go to their churches, they go to their organizations, they go to their job. And they will share these seeds all over. But because you lived who you believe you are, because you stood up for who you believe you are. Now, what is Mabel going to do? Is Mabel going to say, let's see now, I'm a teacher. Everyone expects me to be perfect. Yes. Everyone expects the teacher to be perfect. So now, how could I be a perfect teacher? And what is the only thing that makes a teacher and a non-teacher? A teacher is understood. A non-teacher is not understood. You can be the best teacher, that is, you can have the best knowledge in the world, but if you cannot make it understood, then it is of no avail. It helps nobody, especially not yourself. But when you speak clearly, precisely, and carefully all the time, then everyone in the world will know where you're coming from, know what you believe, know who you are, know what's important to you. And when the people know that, then what happens? When the people know that, they just say, yes, Mr. Obama, you are the president. Because it's only because he believes in himself that he got to where he is. And you and I, it's only because we believe in ourselves that we get to where we are. I've told you this often, and I think it's always worth repeating. I never have trouble sharing, teaching philosophy. And does anyone know my answer? Why do I have no trouble teaching philosophy? Yeah?
Because you're a master.
What?
Because you are a master.
Now come on, you can be a little louder.
Because you are the best.
Cause and effect?
No. Because you are the best in it.
Oh, respect.
The best. Best. Best.
Say it.
Best.
Say what he said.
Because you are the best.
Because I have respect?
The best. Best.
B-E-S-T.
B-E-S-T.
Because I'm the best?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Did you get that? Right off the head. Sam never misses a beat here. All right, you said because I'm the best.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Now, what I teach or don't teach is not necessarily the best. A best teacher, perhaps. The best presenter of the information. Now, why is it that I'm asked to speak in places where they want clear diction? Because I speak with clear diction. Now, when anyone does not speak with clear diction and speaks so fast, that then no one understands it. Now, at the breakfast table this morning, Mabel and Seville and Sam were chatting, and they were saying things. And then they turned to me, and Seville and Mabel said some more things, but she said things that to me, of course, you understand what I'm doing here now, that sounded to me like dialect. And you say, well, Herb, you need to clean your ears out. You need to clean your ears out to know exactly what's going on and to speak more, to hear more clearly. And, okay, perhaps I do. But I'm offering these suggestions to all of you, and I'm giving you these illustrations that if you cannot get across to me and I want to hear you, imagine what you cannot get across to other people who don't know yet that they want to hear you. Always be so clear and so directive in everything that you do that people will want to hear what you're doing. Okay? All right, now. I was after Mabel about speaking clearly. And Mabel was speaking clearly that Sam understood and Seville understood, and perhaps others did too, but I didn't. Now, did you help me to come through? Did you help me understand?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Yeah. Did Sam help me understand? Yes. Now, why could they help me understand and you couldn't help me understand? Perhaps it was your diction. Perhaps it was the manner in which you presented. It certainly wasn't me. I mean, I'm not the fault for not understanding. Right, Mabel? Huh? Huh? Mabel is laughing at me and saying, ha 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 ha, naughty you, naughty you. But it's true. You don't know who you're speaking to. You don't know who you're sharing your life with. You don't know who's going to sign your paycheck tomorrow. So every person that you deal with carefully and lovingly. Every person you deal with as though they might be your boss tomorrow. And you take the time to make sure that you are understood. make sure that you get through with what you want to say. And as you get through with what you want to say, magic takes place. Now, people who write books and who write magazines and things of that nature, you know that the Reader's Digest magazine, you all heard of the Reader's Digest magazine, well, the Reader's Digest magazine has many editors. And every article in the Reader's Digest magazine is edited by 8 different editors. Now, that's just editing it. Now, then every article is checked for making sure that the content of that article is correct, that the facts in that article are true, and they check where it was written from and how it was written and who it involved and the people, and they check with them. I mean, the article is so worked over before you ever get it that when you get it, it's so clear and precise and easy to read and easy to remember, you say, boy, I'd like to write like that. Well, just get yourself 8 editors and the Reader's Digest staff. But truly, truly, I worked in the Science of Mind magazine for a number of years, and I was the editor, and I had an associate editor working for me. And she had been there 25 years before I came, so she ran the show, really. And she would not allow that magazine to go out, finished copy, until she had checked it 4 times. And she would send it in and have little correction, a little comma out of place, anything. She was so precise. That magazine was absolutely magnificent. Now, perhaps she was a little overboard, but she did a good job, and she believed him. She was like the Reader's Digest. She was very, very careful. She checked to make sure that all the details were right, and all the details. I had been a newspaper editor for many years, and we didn't have time to check all those things. We just put it in and ran it, and it sounded about right, then that's okay, that was good. But she wouldn't let that happen. Reader's Digest wouldn't let that happen. You, I recommend, don't let that happen. Anytime people come up to you and say, did you know this about that person? You just say to them, if it's good, great. If it's not good, say, no, I hadn't heard that. I find that interesting. Goodbye, you know. And don't carry it further. Don't feel you have to tell your family what somebody said, which was not very nice. Don't feel you have to go out with the circumstances in the world that are not pleasant, circumstances which are gossip, and you have to tell it to other people, whether it's your family or anybody. Don't do that, because that's not you. You make sure of what you're dealing with, how you're dealing with it, and who you're dealing with. And when you do this, you deal beautifully with people. You deal beautifully with the children in your life. So, Lucky, you have 3 kids, right?
How many?
One. You have 1 kid. Well, Lucky, do you spend time every day with your 1 kid?
Yes, I do.
Do you tell him how wonderful he is? Is it a girl or a boy?
Yes.
It's a huh?
Yes.
I just saw you shake your head. It's a girl or a boy?
Yes, I do.
I'm sorry?
I do.
Is it a girl or a boy?
It's a girl.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Super. Okay. Now, does she love you?
Very well. She loves me.
Yes. And does she love it when you spend time with her?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you're a little hesitant there. Does your daughter like it when you are with her?
Yes.
Does your daughter like to be with you?
Yes.
Give me some answers.
Yes.
You have no answers? You don't hear me? Do you not understand me? If you don't understand me, I can understand that. Does your daughter love to be with you? Okay. Do you love to be with your daughter?
Of course, yes.
When you are with your daughter, are you always very careful to say positive things that will make her feel good about herself?
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. Okay. Do you plan on being positive with her? And do you plan on saying positive things to her so that she will feel good about herself?
Yes,
Do you plan on that?
Yes, I do.
All right. Now, do you think it's going to pay off?
Very well.
Right away?
Oh, yes.
Right away. Okay.
Very
now.
Well.
Very well.
Yes.
Then keep that in mind always. Keep that in mind always, because that is very important. Now, is your daughter worth all the effort you give her? Is your daughter important enough to you for you to spend time with her?
She's important.
Okay. Be very careful that the time you spend is quality time. It's not a matter of going to the theater together. It's not a matter of going out and playing together. It's a matter of just being with her and telling her how wonderful she is and telling her how great she is. And that applies to all of our children. Spending time with them, telling them how fantastic they are. And when we tell them that, what's going to happen? What is going to happen when we tell our children how wonderful they are? Anybody?
They will express it.
They'll be fantastic, right? They cannot help it. They are a reflection of what we believe in them. And they will pick up what we believe in them so quickly, and they'll put it to work so quickly in their life that we will just be surprised. O.K. brought his brood here one time and had them all sing our latest songs. And they all stood up in front here, you know, from one end of the block to the other. And they sang. And they sang. And what did he do? He stood out in front of them and he directed them like a choir director, you know. I mean, you know what's going on at home. I mean, that's the boss. He's playing the game and playing it well. And that's beautiful. And do they respect their daddy? My, yes. Do they think their daddy's the greatest? Yes. Do they see a lot of their daddy? Not necessarily. Do they like to see what they do see of their daddy? Yes. Now you see, what is that all about? What that all about is that when you like yourself, you can talk to any audience you want, and they will be just beautiful. They'll be just a wonderful reflection of who you are. Okay, now, are there any questions from anybody on anything we've been talking about here? And you want to write it down, don't you? Or you want to say it so clearly that I'll understand it?
Let me try. Let me say.
So far, I don't understand anything. Yes? What?
What of a situation where you get your children when they have done something wrong?
Yes?
If they have done something wrong, how do you handle that in the midst of praising and...
Well,
it's just like you talked to Mr. Okuna.
What's that?
Just like you talked to Mr. Okuna when he did something that was not okay.
What do you do when children do something wrong and you must discipline them? Is that your statement?
That's what I'm asking. How
okay.
do you handle it?
Well, I just want to make sure I follow what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. When you have children that do something wrong, you go and you take a stick and you beat their backsides. Is that right? Is that right? Is that right? No. What do? You go to them and you say to them, as I have said so often here, what seems to be the problem? I mean, the kid is being very bad, very mean, and he's messing up everything. Okay? Do you understand what I just said? Okay. Now, he's messing up everything. And so, you take the child and you say, what's the matter? You got a problem. Something's bothering you. It's not just that you're this meanness that you're doing here. That's just surface stuff. There's something deep in your heart that's bothering you. Now, come on, sit down. Come on over here. Let's talk about it. I care about you. What you've been doing is not necessarily good or bad, but I want to know why you're doing it so that we can figure out a way to make you happy again. Now, come on. Tell me what's going on. And you're not going to get an answer straight away. You're going to have to sit there and prime the pump a little bit and talk to him and talk to him. And when you talk to him, he's going to see that you're not trying to judge him, that you're being fair and you're being open and you're being considerate of the fact that he does have a problem. And so finally he gets the problem off his chest. And then you say, now we can work on it. Now we can work on it. And together you work on the problem and solve it. Okay? Now, together you work on the solution and you bring it forth. You don't work on the problem. The problem was that he was being mean to everybody. The solution was that if he's not mean, well, now, that was really not the problem. The problem was he had a hurt in his heart over something. And you want to understand it to help him to understand himself. Now, does that make any sense to you?
Yeah.
This is what every family has to do. Because if you don't, then you never know what really bothers the children. Sometimes children are very upset because they think that they caused their father to die. There's an accident. And the child says, well, I was angry at Dad just before the accident, and I was mad at him, and I told him I didn't want to see him again. I was so angry at him, but I didn't mean it, and he died. What can I do now? So, there you got a real problem, don't you? You got a real circumstance that needs to have a lot of love. And so you talk to the kid, and the first thing you ensure that the kid knows that he did not kill his father. You follow me? He did not kill his father. His father died. That he was angry at his dad and was going through some emotional thing had nothing to do with his father's death. His father's death was just something totally different. And then after you get over that, and you get over that two or three times, then you talk to the kid and you say, okay, now, you've been having a tough time with your dad because your dad has been wanting you to be the very best that you can. And it's not easy, because your dad always was very, very picky on making sure you did everything right. Now, let's you and I sit down and figure out how you can live your life and be yourself. And always remember that when you are yourself, that's what your dad really wants. He wants you to be yourself. He always wanted you to be yourself, but he wanted you to be such a good boy that you're not like a puppy dog that goes in somebody's house and lifts up its leg. You want to be well-mannered. You want to have good manners wherever you go. And that's what your dad was very much interested in for you, because he saw how you were kind of unhappy at times. And you see, if you are, and you're not really counseling, what you're doing is you're being unconditionally loving. Without judgment, you're speaking to the child. Without judgment, you're speaking to the circumstance. Without judgment, you're opening the child to his inner self. And when he finds that inner self, then everything's good again. Make sense?
Yes.
That handle your kid all right?
I don't use that completely.
What's that?
I said I don't use that approach completely.
You don't use that approach?
Completely. That's all the time.
All the time you use that approach?
It's not all the time that I use this approach.
Well, can you see its value?
Yes, I see its value. Yes, I see its value.
Now, did you say you had another condition that should be met and can only be met some differently?
Okay, like, for example, there was the very first time my daughter told me lies.
My what?
My daughter.
Your daughter?
They told me lies.
Told you a lie.
Yes. I did not beat her.
You did. You were not hard on her.
Yes, I didn't beat her, but I was tempted to. But ultimately, I talked to them. So after talking to them, then the next day, I also talked to them again as we were praying. And then they opened up.
Yeah.
Tell me exactly what happened.
Right. Now, if you could have been wise enough, and we seldom are, if you could have been wise enough to immediately, when you found out your daughter lied, take her aside and say, sweetheart, I understand that you lied. Now, you're free to do whatever you want to do, but you get the repercussion for whatever you want to do. Now, why did you lie? Why did you lie? What made you feel that that was the way to answer that problem? And don't make the lie as though it's some terrible thing. It's terrible by itself, but don't make it terrible. Just make it as something that we work with. And so you say, why did you lie? I have a lady who is raising her grandchildren, and one of the grandchildren lies and steals from her purse and things like that. And that made her very angry and very upset. In fact, it made her feel like not having anything to do with the girl. The boy, the brother, is the ideal brother. You know, he's perfect in every way. You know those kind of kids. It's just wonderful, just super wonderful. And the sister, yuck, you know. And the sister's really a nice girl. Well, I talked to the lady about this, and I said, you cannot get anywhere with that girl until you get over being angry at the girl. You're angry at the girl because she's not as good as her brother. You're angry at the girl because she's not doing the things that the brother did. The grandma would say, come in here, and the brother would come. She'd say, come in here to the daughter and the girl, and she wouldn't come. And so we worked together for this for a long time. And then at one point, I thought we were making real good space. But I had her telling her granddaughter that she's a special girl, that she's wonderful, that she loved her. And even helping her find some of these atrocious dresses that the kids were wearing at that time, you know, and saying to her, never take anything out of my purse. Ask me first, because I have to know what's in my purse when I go to the store. If I go to the store and buy something, don't have the money because somebody took it out, you know. But just ask me, because you know I never deny you anything. Just ask me, and know that we never touch anything in anybody else. Now, you know, sweetheart, I don't go in your purse. If I went in your purse, what would I find? All sorts of interesting mysteries. But no, without emotion, which is hard to do, without the feeling of judgment, because lying is wrong, stealing is wrong, you are the sinner of the sins of all sins, you know, you are the devil's workshop, you know, and with that attitude, which is what most of us had grown up in, that's terrible. But if understanding and tolerance can be exercised by the mother or the father, whomever is involved, and then you say, okay, sweetheart, remember this, I love you, I'm your dad. You never have to steal to get anything. If you need something, you come to me and I will help you do it. You never have to steal from anybody, and never out of my purse or anybody else's. Never do that. And if she had done this with the girl, well, she didn't get to that point yet. If she had done that with the girl would have been dear to her heart. But I don't want you to have your daughter alienated from you just because she lied and you didn't understand at first why. Now you do, and that probably doesn't help it any bit either. But what you say is, if you need anything, come to me. You don't ever have to steal anything in life, ever, from anybody. Just come to me. If I have it, I'll help you. If I can't, don't have it, we'll go to the bank and borrow it, you know. But just come to me. Oh, really, Dad? Really? Yes. I'm not always going to give you everything you want. We'll talk about it. But if it is something that's so important to you that you'd have to steal to do it, just come to me first. Come to me first, and we'll work it out. So, can you see how that would work? You have to be at peace with yourself first. And when you are at peace with yourself first, then you can be at peace with your daughter. You can be at peace with the people in your world. You can be at peace with all the problems that come down the way, because they're no longer problems, they're just conditions looking for solutions. Okay, we touched it all right?
Yes.
Good. Anybody else? Good. Yes. You had your hand raised.
Okay.
You raised your hand.
You have just spoken about older children. What about the younger ones? You have just spoken about the older children. Now, what about the toddlers?
They're all inclusive.
But when you talk to toddlers, should you say exactly what you're saying to the older ones, to those younger ones?
Okay. Definition? Peter? What'd you say? Peter? Come. No. Come, Peter, come. You're my translator here.
He said,
My sister. I love that.
I said, you have told us how to handle the young stars, the small children. What about the grown-up ones?
The toddlers.
The toddlers.
Toddlers are what?
No, the younger ones, 1 year old, 1.5 years.
The toddlers, the preschoolers, schoolers.
How do we work with the little ones?
How do you handle
the little ones?
Yeah. Okay. How do you handle the little ones?
Okay, that's good. I got that point. Okay, now, how do we handle the little ones?
Well,
that's the easiest thing in the world. And you say, ho, 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 you haven't seen the ones I've been working with. But how do we handle the little ones? Sam is coming out of a funk, out of a feeling of not feeling so good. And Sam is making great strides. But every time any one of us look at Sam and say, Sam, you are fantastic. Sam, you are great. We are empowering Sam with our energy and our love to be all that he's able to be. And Sam says, I feel good. I won't hurt. I'm fantastic. You see, when we empower, oh, Sam, you don't look so good. Oh, Sam, you got a problem. Oh, Sam, that's not what he wants to hear. If you're going to do that, bury him, you know. Excuse me. If you're going to be unkind by saying what appearances may be, that's terrible. Now, you have little children. We'll start with the preemie. I told you about Doris and the premature children. And she works in the preemie ward of the hospital at nights. And these little children that are born too soon are with oxygen and all the other good things, intravenous feeding and stuff, to take care of them. Well, now these little children are pretty tough, pretty tough. And one of the little children was just two little twins, and they were two little girls, and one was not doing well at all. One was terminal, was going to die. And so the nurses said, what the hell, you know? Be academic about it, what the hell? So they picked up the twin sister, who was healthy, and they put her in with the sister who was having trouble. And they laid the arm over the sister who was having trouble. And within moments, the life signs of the child started to improve. And within a day, that child was back to normal. But still a preemie, still needing special care. But that vibration of the well sister putting the arm over the unwell sister just did magical things. Just magical things. Now, the nurses didn't have permission to do that from the hospital. They just did it on their own because they felt they were going to do everything they can to save that little child, because the little child should have a right to be saved and a right to live. And that's what they're doing. Well, now the nurse, every time she receives a new baby, and she receives maybe 3 or 4 a night, she takes the new baby in her arms and says, welcome to my world. Hey, who says that? Welcome? Anybody says welcome around here? Welcome to the world, you wonderful little creature. You're so fantastic. I love you, I love you, I love you. And what is that nurse doing? That nurse is pouring her energy into that child. That nurse is pouring energy, mental, physical, spiritual, all the energy of her being she's pouring into that child. Not saying, I'm pouring energy into you, I'm dumping it in with a funnel here and I'm doing all this and that and you know, none of those things, but just pouring it into her. And as she pours it in, the little child that's born, just taken from its mother and brought into the preemie ward, the little child looks up at her, you know, the eyes aren't open yet, nothing is functioning outside, so to speak, because it's a little early. But it has that smile on it. It feels the energy. It feels the energy. And those little children, all of them that Doris handled, they come 2 or 3 days, maybe 4 days earlier, they can be released from the hospital. Then not the hospital, but from the intensive care ward into the normal care ward. But they can be released, even though they're premature. Because immediately they have strength building up in them. Now, how do you deal with children who are young or 1, 2, 3 years old, who might not respond to logic and reason or anything? And don't forget, every child, every human being, everybody in this world responds to love. Right, Sam?
Yes.
Everybody responds to love. Now, if you unconditionally love the child, now, what is it? I forgot to pronounce your name right.
I forgot to pronounce your name right. Say it.
Ethelbert, right?
Ethelbert!
Sir.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Now, what did Ethelbert do with his daughter? He said, "You lied! You did this!" Well, immediately, the vibrations were, you see, my dad's going to kill me. He's going to kill me, you know. It doesn't matter how old the girl is, but he's going to kill me. Now, those vibrations are so powerful and so destructive that everything you do is almost lost. So he waited. He got out of there before he gave her a spanking too. And as he did this, then he took charge and things started working out just fine. So when you have little children that misbehave or that, well, no, let's stop there, right there. The dog whisperer goes to people who have dogs that are recalcitrant, that are not cooperating. They're dogs that are pretending that they're the leader of the flock, really the pack, and they start going around protecting everybody, and they bite people who come in because they don't want people coming into their family, you know. And this is our close family, and we don't want anybody here. And so the dog trainer goes in, and he said, what's wrong? And they said, well, he's so defensive. And so the dog trainer said, okay, do you know why he's defensive? Do you know why? He doesn't know the rules. Nobody has told him the rules. He shouldn't lift his leg on the furniture. He should do his duty outdoors. He should do this, do that. Nobody gave him the rules. Now who's going to give him the rules? His parents, his master, his mistress, the alpha people of the family. And so the alpha people of the family are going to say to the dog, down, quiet, stay. And then the alpha people of the family are going to train the dog in knowing what its position is. And the dog doesn't know it shouldn't do these things. And your 1 and 2 year old children don't know what the rules are yet. They don't know what they should do or what they shouldn't do. So the dog trainer takes them and puts the dog on a leash and has the dog walk behind them and say, "Now, this is where you belong. I am the leader. I am the alpha. I'm leading the pack. The rest of you are back here, back here, back here." And so the dog says, "Goody, I don't have to be in charge anymore. I don't have to look around and find out if there's any problems out there, if any tigers or lions are trying to get in on my master, you know." And that's what the dog says. Now, the little children. The little children, they too are like the dog. Because they haven't been trained. Who's going to train them? They haven't been trained where to potty. So they do it in their pants. They have a diaper put on them, which says, "Hey, don't worry about it. We'll just take off that and put a fresh one on." And so the kids think that's okay. Some don't get potty trained for a long time because it's a bother. And some families do it very well. They just leave the kid running around without pants on. And then they don't worry about it. But the kid hasn't learned what the rules are. Now, what is one of the best ways for kids to learn rules? Lucky, you're messing up. And I'm being facetious. If kids don't have other kids to show them the way of the family, then the kids don't learn too fast. They learn from their peers. They learn from other children in the family. Okay, so Lucky, you don't have any other children besides one. And so how did you train your one child? You trained your one child by showing him what to do. Now, their daughter Chioma, as a little boy named Ibube. And Ibube was 3, 4, and 5 as I knew him over the years and know him over the years. Now he's 5 years old. Well, last year when I was visiting, I went in the bathroom, closed the door, and right away the door opens up and in he comes. He's got to watch what I'm doing. He's got to see what I'm doing. He's got to see me, this white person. You know. Okay, that's fine. And I say to him, "No big deal." And then I figured, I might as well have this be a lesson right away. And I say, "Now, big people, big nice people, lift up the toilet seat when they go potty. They don't let the toilet seat down, you know, and then go on the seat so that when mommy comes and sits on the seat, she gets wet pants, you know." And I said, "Big people, lift up the seat." Well, that didn't work last year, because when I came this year, he did the same thing again. And so I said to him, "Are you a big people or a little people?" I'm a big people, you know. 5-year-old, they want to be a big people. And I said, well, what do big people do? He said, what do you mean? Well, we were in the bathroom. And I said, well, what do big people do in the bathroom? Oh, big people lift up the seat so that the seat doesn't get wet and mommy sits on it and doesn't like that. And, oh, did you lift up the seat? I forgot. Now, that's from a year before when I was there. A year before. And now he's remembering that stuff. Now it's sinking in. Now he's acting upon it. Now, he's 5. Now, how do you work with people who are... I'm not there long. I'm with him only for a couple of hours. And we did some very important things while I was there. We did an operation for him and other things which were very helpful. But the thing is, you are working with these little children. And as you're working with these little children, what you do is to tell these little children in your mind what it is that you would like them to do. Now, those little children understand very well what you are thinking in your mind. The little children understand very well what you believe in your mind, what you have going on in your mind. And if you think, you know, be careful, don't fall, be careful, don't do it. And so, if you are a confident, good parent, and you've written your own book on how to train children, what you say is, well, you're wonderful. And the kids are crawling along the floor. You just know how to crawl so beautiful. You do that so nice. And then he crawls up on the furniture, you know. Oh, you do that so nice. You do that so beautiful. And you know your feet should stay on the floor, you know. You don't crawl up on top of the table. Your feet stay on the floor. And so they don't know what you're saying, truly. They have an idea. And you just compliment them for doing everything they're doing that's right. And within a matter of 2 or 3 minutes of doing that sincerely, the child will have his feet on the floor. The dog trainer goes into the house, and within 3 minutes he has trained those dogs how to be subservient. How to be subservient. Now, in effect, you're training these young children how to be subservient. You want them to be subservient to the rule of the house, to the program of the house, to the way things are done. Because the more subservient they can be to that, not that they're subservient to themselves, but subservient to the real rules of the house. And as you work with them, you will find that they will do just magical things for you. I know every child that has been brought in my attention, and I've worked with them on anything, they just instantly fall in love with me, instantly do everything I tell them to do, instantly cooperate. You say, well, why don't you become a dog trainer, a baby trainer? Because that's not where my choice is. My choice is to share a philosophy. And I share a philosophy with the kids, too. I share a philosophy. And what philosophy do I share with them?
Mr. Candle.
Yeah, that's one of them, too, Mr. Candle. But I tell them, they're God. They're wonderful. They're fantastic. They're beautiful. Everything they do is good, very good. I just say, wow, you guys are great, 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 you know? And what do they do? Yes, 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 yes. You're so smart to see that in us. That's how you work with little children that you cannot get through to because they haven't got the vocabulary to understand what you're talking about yet. And you just work with them gently and powerfully with your mind. Now, when they do something wrong, you don't say, oh, you did something wrong. You say, yeah, that's almost there. Let's do that again. Let's do that again. And so, in the process, they make a mess out of things, but that's okay. You just keep them doing it until they do it so that they're doing it comfortably and doing it right. And then you can wipe up the mess after you're all done. You don't wipe up the mess when the game begins. You wipe up the mess when the game is over. And teaching is a game. And it's a wonderful game. It's a game in which we all learn how to be ourselves and have fun. And so when I work with children, that's the things that I do. Like Seville says, I put Mr. Candle on the internet all the time. And I'm going along and giving my thought for today's and so forth. And then the girls will say, well, how about a Mr. Candle story? And then Alan said, well, we're going to put a special cover on it. We're going to do this. I said, don't worry me about details. I'll give you the story. And so then I give Mr. Cannon's story. And it is so wonderful, so powerful, so great. These stories touch the people who they are. And it is something that really lets everybody know who and what they are and where they're going. This is something that is for us. It's something for you. Now, I have the answer for raising little children, but it may not be your answer. And the answer is, you raise them with your thought. They respond to your thought. Whether you like it or not, they respond to your thought. And if you tell them they're nice and they're not nice, they know. If you tell them that they're naughty and they're not naughty, they know. But what you want to do is tell them the truth. Now, if they mess something up, you don't say you messed something up. You say, now what are we practicing here? What are we going to learn by doing this? Oh, I know. You're going to learn to be mommy's helper. You know. And they're just maybe 1 year old or 2 years old. They know. You're going to learn to be mommy's helper. Now, this is how mommy does it. She gets down here with a bucket, and she gets down here with a cloth, and she wipes up all the milk here and all the stuff that's all over, and then she puts it in the bucket. Now, you want to try it? Yes. So they try it, and they make a worse mess. More milk all over the whole floor. And you patiently say, oh, you're learning how so nicely. You're doing it so nicely. Oh, man, it takes patience. You know, it takes a lot of... And so the first time, it's a mess. The second time, it's still a mess. The third time, maybe a little progress. Maybe a little progress. But you have to be patient, and you have to keep from being angry. They're not doing it on purpose. They're not doing it just to make a mess. They're not taking their food and throwing it because they want to make a mess. They're taking their food and throwing it because they want to see how much they can get away with. And if you let them get away with it, then you're not in charge. Anytime a child throws things, it's because it's got its own little tantrum. It wants to get away with something that way. And all you do is say, hey, I know that you're upset, and you're doing that because you're upset, but that's not acceptable. That's not acceptable around here. Now, you go stand in the corner for a while and you figure out what you want to do. Do you want to do acceptable things or do you want to stand in the corner? And so the kid will come back in a short time, whether it's 1, 2, or 3 years old. I tell you, they know more than we think they know. And they'll come back and they'll say, okay, okay. One little kid, he keeps a chair in the corner because he gets sent there all the time. And he wants to know that he's got a place to sit down. But, we don't need that. That's overkill. That's having a lesson that isn't learned. It just becomes a joke. We want to make sure that everything is so unconditionally lovingly taught, unconditionally lovingly trained, that the child does not feel that it's a joke. The child does not feel that it's being put on. The child at all times wants to feel that you really believe in him. We had a TV show in here, I think it was, and this man came up to me during the TV show, wanted to have a handout, and I said, I don't think so. I don't give handouts anyhow. I said, I don't think so. I said, you know, I look at you, and you have a nice face, but you need a shave, and you have a pleasant body, but you need to change your clothes, put on some fresh clothes. Now, you go home, and you wash up, shave, put on some fresh clothes, and then go look for a job. And you'll find it. You'll find it. He looked at me, as much as to cut my throat, you know, and then he looked at me and he said, you're the first person who ever talked to me like that. And he said, you know, you're right. And he left. He left. But you see, this is what happens. When you stand up for the principle that you know and believe, and you speak it to people, not with anger or not with put down, but just with, hey, I know where you're coming from. You're coming from the area that you feel pathetic, you feel useless, you feel there's nothing in life that you can do that's going to make you a success. And so I told him, go home, wash up. You'll be a success. Because you are a success. You are a success right now. And that's what it is. Every one of you is a success right now. But you're nothing. Pshh! You're nothing compared to what you can be if you liked yourself a little better. If you just thought that you were the greatest, just thought you were the greatest, that's all. If you thought you were the greatest, wow! There'd be nothing stopping you. Really. Now, these two gentlemen were given their certificate for their undergraduate college graduation yesterday. And before that, Peter spoke up a little bit, but Arnold didn't speak up very well. And so, when they gave their talk, they both spoke up beautifully, strongly, powerfully. You got it in you. And at first, they were a little reluctant. And I thought, oh boy, what kind of people are these going to be to go out and talk about what they believe? But then they started speaking positively about what they believed. Both of them. And when they did, they just lit up like candles. And that was beautiful. But you can do it. But somebody needs to put a fire under you. So you do it regularly. Do it all the time. You want to always be on top. Now, do you think Bill Gates ever thinks that he's poor at any time? No, he doesn't think he's poor at any time because he got a lot of money. All right. Do you ever think that you are not a good person? If you think that you're not a good person, you're saying there is a time when you think you're not a good person. Do any of you ever think you're not a good person? If you have this 1-2-year-old baby down on the floor here, crawling along, do you think it's not a good person? It doesn't even know what it is yet. And so you look at that child and you send it all your beams of love. You send it all your unconditional love. And you just speak to it and you say, man, you are so blessed to be born in a time like today. With the things that are going on today. With the people that are going on today. And we understand babies so well today. Next thing you know, we're going to make a baby astronaut. But no, really, they understand babies. They know what babies do and how they act and how they feel. And because of that, working with babies to get the most out of them is going to be easy. People have said to me so often, little children should not be deprived of their childhood. And I say, nonsense. Little children should be given every opportunity that they could possibly handle to be whatever they can. What would you think if Mozart were not allowed to be Mozart? What do you think if Mozart were not allowed to go out and play the piano, or play the violin, or write music? Sure, he's 3 years old. Sure, he's 4 years old. Sure, he's 6, 8, 10, 12 years old. Sure, he sits at the piano playing the music. But you see, you think of him sitting at the piano, learning the piano. What's he doing? What's he doing on the piano?
Himself.
He's playing it. He's emoting. He's living through the piano. He knows the piano. He knows the music. The music he writes is note perfect. He doesn't even have to erase to make it perfect. He knows what he's doing. It's his life. You know what some kids do? Some kids, their life is volleyball, football. Some kids, their life is tennis or golf. Some kids, their life is just sports. And you think, what a terrible thing sports have to be your life. No, that's their life. And then they become great athletes. They become Olympic stars. But if they did not practice and practice and work at their Olympic stardom, they would not get there. But they practice not because their mom and dad says practice or because their coach says practice. They practice because they want to become a star. They want to reveal the star that's in them. And so the little children of this world, they want to reveal the majesty that's in them. And the only way that they can reveal the majesty that's within them is if we as their parents, we as their mentors, as their friends, see them fantastic, see them absolutely magnificent. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
Are you ready for that? In everything you do, with every child you ever look at, no matter whether it's your own daughter or whether it's somebody else, you look at them and you say, hey, I understand what you were going through. You had a problem and you saw no other way to solve it, and so you solved it your way. But now after this, come talk to me and let me offer you my help and my advice, because I am able to do that, and I don't judge you. I do say that we don't ever steal from anybody. We don't ever take from anybody. We don't ever do something which is not right. But hey, when you got a problem and you need some help, come and we'll work it out. When you work it out, then somehow the solution is there. Somehow it all comes to the fore. It all comes to be so simple and so easily done. And when it's simple and easily done, then the 1, 2, and 3 year olds, fantastic. Fantastic. Every one of you is a master at handling anything, because you have one theory in your life, I believe. And that theory is the theory of unconditional love under all circumstances. You're expressing unconditional love under all circumstances. Under all circumstances, you're seeing everything with unconditional love. Unconditional love doesn't judge, doesn't possess, doesn't try to get things done, doesn't expect anything, it just loves. The little child messes up the floor, and instead of getting angry or trying to push the kid, you just say, come on, let's do it again. Let's do it again. Little children help their mother wash the dishes, and they break the dishes, and they take time doing the dishes, and it's easier to do it myself. And because it's easier to do it yourself, the little child doesn't have an opportunity to learn how to do it himself. The opportunity of being a parent is a great privilege, and it's usually given to the wrong people. Because unfortunately, 50% of the marriages in the United States fall apart.
100%.
What?
How many percent?
Who said that?
How many percent?
50.
50.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a statistic in the Wikiapa, Wikipedia, you know about that. And in Wikipedia, just look up divorces in America, and it'll show you. Look up divorces in any other country you want. But 50%, okay, now, here is the tragedy of the 50%. The 50%, half of those people were already married before they had their new divorce. So now you have that compounded, because they're not designed to live together. They haven't learned how to be a husband and wife. They haven't learned how to be a family person. They haven't learned how to give and take in marriage. And so they get a divorce. And this has been approved by the state and by the people, that when something doesn't work out, you just call hotter, let me out of here, I want to quit. And if everything in life that comes along that challenges us, and we want to run away and quit right away, we won't be the kind of persons that we want to be. We won't be the Obamas of this world. We won't be the magic people of this world. His parents divorced, but that didn't affect him. He decided to have a strong and perfect marriage. He decided to have a wife that loved what he wanted to do, and he loved what she wanted to do, and the two of them make a great team. And he puts her to work on his program. What did he make her? He made her some high office. No, that's nepotism of the highest degree. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt's wife, whatever her name was, she could not hear. She had no hearing at all. She could read lips and so forth. And so she would go out and she would get information for the president to help him to understand what the people were thinking and doing and stuff like that. Eleanor Roosevelt was her name. And so she would go out and do these things. Well, then Franklin died. And what happened to Eleanor? Eleanor is a brilliant woman. She is a brilliant. She became the ambassador. She became the ambassador to different countries. No, she couldn't hear a word. Couldn't hear a word. And she became the ambassador. What a magic lady. And she wrote a number of books. Beautifully done. Now, just because we have a limitation doesn't mean that that keeps us from being super beings, super persons. And
if we have a goal or an aspiration for ourselves, then we can become the super beings par excellence. It's a wonderful program, wonderful show. Any other questions or thoughts? Yes?
I want to ask a question on...
Help me on this, Peter.
You talk about that at the time I came, especially with reference to the question our brother asked about how to choose a child that bears the life. Now, if we become non-judgmental as we are, we need to understand.
Okay.
That means
Peter is going to tell me what you have said so I can hear it. Now, Peter, what did he say, please? I'm sorry? Yeah, I can't hear you, and so I'd like to answer you directly. So, come right up. Come up. Sit on my lap. Okay, what did you say?
I'm asking a question on being non-judgmental.
Non-judgmental?
Yes.
Yes? How do you...
You mentioned that.
How do you...
How do you get about that? Are you saying that there is no issue of question of right or wrong?
Because how do you define judgmental? Yes. Is that one of your statements?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Because why I'm asking this question, to my mind, being judgmental,
is
trying to distinguish between what is right and what is wrong. Like the question you raised about the child who stole. A child who steals and a child who does not steal. There are two different attitudes or characters of people. Now, if we are non-judgmental, that means whether you steal or whether you don't steal, what is being, if you comment on that, if you recognize
You're going on and on and on. I don't even know where to start. Now, give me a chance to talk to something that you're talking about.
Yes.
You said in point here that learning how to be non-judgmental is not easy, right?
Yes.
All right. And you said that you'd like to be non-judgmental in the way that you handle your life, right? Or something like that.
Now, what I'm saying is that, is there no distinction?
Is there another what?
Is there no difference? No difference between what is right and what is wrong?
Oh,
because when you exercise your judgment faculty, you will now distinguish between what is right and what is wrong.
Let me play that. Being non-judgmental does not mean that you're discussing what's right and wrong. What's right and wrong has nothing to do with non-judgmentalism. Okay, now, you come up to me and you say, I'm right, I'm right. And I say, I'm right. And I'm non-judgmental. And I say, well, perhaps there's a place for your opinion. Perhaps you are right. I'm not going to say that you're right. I know I'm right. But the thing is, you could be right too under the circumstances that might be involved in how you were defining what you were saying. You follow me? Okay, but if you're saying black is white and white is black, you know, or black is black and white is white, however you're saying it, then what is this? Black is not white and white is not black. That is a truism that we stand behind because that's what we learned. And then you come to a person who is in some way affected with their eyes and they see everything white, black, and everything black, white. And so for them, that's what they see because of the injury to their eyes or the however their eyes see it. Now, you wouldn't say to that person that they were lying to you by saying white, black, white because that's how they really see it. Now, if you're being non-judgmental and the purpose of talking about non-judgmental at all is the purpose of saying that non-judgmental means that we allow everyone to walk the path as they understand it to be walked. And we respect their direction that they're going. We may not choose to do it ourselves. They may walk down and walk across the fire pit, you know, and walk on fire. and we may choose not to do that. Now,
he's talking about the child.
I'm referring.
Oh, we're talking about the child now.
Yes, the child.
The child at that time.
Okay, well, I wasn't getting it. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
He's talking about the situation of a child, like I told you that my daughter told me lies.
Well,
how do non-judgmental handle that situation?
All right, that works out fine too. When you have a child, you're saying 2 years old or so?
Yes, like the example I gave.
And the child is 2 years old, and the child is acting up and being mean and hateful or whatever.
Something like that.
And so,
even 5 years,
10 years. I'm
sorry? Even 5 years, 10 years.
However old,
the child may be 5 years or 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. The age is not too important. But
yes.
The child is 5 or 10 years. Okay, now, the child is acting up and being obstreperous, being mean, being hateful, being bad in every possible way, okay? All right, now, how can you be non-judgmental with a child like that?
Yes.
All right? Well, if you are a parent, then you will do as I suggested before. If you are a parent, you will say to the child, all right, come on, let's go and have some ice cream. Now, what seems to be the problem? What's going on in your world that's making everything seem so tough? What's going on in your world that makes everybody seem wrong except you? Now, what's going on? There's probably some reason for it. We want to find out what it is so that you don't have to have any problems with it. And so as you talk to the child, little by little, they reveal to you what their feelings are. They reveal to you what their what their attitude is. And as they reveal to you what their attitude is, then you can say, okay, I understand that. I understand that. And then, but now what are we going to do about it? So your sister has been stealing all your clothes. Your sister has been messing things up and blaming you for what she did. And you are just retaliating and you're very angry. Now, what do you think we should do? Should we take your sister and give her to the neighbors? Should we sell her? And what should we do? How should we do this? And be sort of stupid. Because the more stupid and ludicrous you are, the more the kid thinks, no, we wouldn't do that. You know, as much as I hate my sister, I don't want to get rid of her. And really, it's not her fault, it's my fault. But they don't want to say that yet. So, as you talk with them, and as you share with, as you unconditionally love them, and let them reveal to you what their real problem is, then you will find out what the real problem is, and you can solve it. Whereas, if you go on the appearances of how they're being mean and bad children, then you never will come to the solution. To do this in the right way takes really a most amazing person to be unconditionally loving. Unconditional love is such a lovely, beautiful treasure that the only person who's ever done it most successfully has been Jesus the Christ. Everybody else has tried it and has looked for it, but right away, they want to get their big nose in there and say, this is right and this is wrong. There's no right and wrong to unconditional love. There's only understanding. And with understanding, then pretty soon, what is right in the community and what is wrong in the community, it takes its place. And the child and the adult will soon live according to what is right and wrong. The little children, I know what you're talking about, the children of 5 and 12 and 13 years old getting into trouble doing these things, because I've dealt with some pretty crummy ones. And it's amazing how just a little bit of understanding, just a little bit of a non-judgmental attitude on my part opened up the doorway for them to find out what their problem was, solve it, and go on with their life. Do you have internet? Do you have internet? Do you have internet?
Okay, I do.
Yes, no?
Yes,
he does. Okay, well, on the internet, go to our homepage, www.goduni.org. It's on our GIFs if you have any around here too. But go to that and then go to the archives. And when you go to the archives, then bring up all the different types of, and bring up the Mr. Candle tapes. And you bring up the Mr. Candle tapes, and Mr. Candle deals with this topic continuously. He deals with this topic and is constantly going through the topic and the conversation. Ciao, guys. So, that's wonderful. Anything else? Anybody?
Yes,
You happy? You ready for this afternoon's program? Great, because we're going to have some nice examples of things that we can do, techniques and exercises that we can use. Okay. Thank you very much. I love you. You have a question? That's great.
I want to know, is there really anything, is there really nothing good or bad, but is there really nothing that can be defined as good or bad, but just the way of thinking that can make it so? How true is it that there is really nothing good or bad, but thinking that makes it so? Is it really acceptable? I want us to...
All right, Ethelbert, you want to give me her statement clearly? Ethelbert? Ethelbert?
Yeah.
You want to give me her statement clearly?
Yes. Is it really true? Is it really true?
Is there any truth?
Is it really true, yes, that there is nothing good or bad?
Is there any truth that there's nothing good nor bad in the universe? Is that your question?
I'm thinking makes it so.
That's right.
Is it thinking only that makes it so?
We'll take that in steps. Now, your statement is it true that there's nothing good or bad in the universe? Okay, step one. Everything is God, and God is good, and anything that is bad, we have interpreted it as bad. We have called it bad. It doesn't mean that it is bad. No. For something to be bad is something that's not harmonious with the community, it's something that's not harmonious with us, it's something that's non-beneficial to us, and so we call it bad. Now, God created all and said all was good and very good. Everything. Everything. There's not a thing in this universe that is bad. Now, we make it bad by calling it bad. Now, how do we take something that might be called bad and look at the other side? Well, we look at the other side when something is called bad by looking at what is the reason for something being done. Why did the child act that way or the adult act that way? And were they acting that way because they were meaning to do that, or was it just their frustration? Were they meaning to be evil or bad, or was it just a frustration of their consciousness and their heart and their self? So if you look at it that way, you come to a different point of view than when you just look at it, is it black or is it white? Is it right or is it wrong? Much like his question too. And that's something that can be very, very tough on a lot of people. Because a lot of people, they want white, black, you know, there is no other way to look at something. And there sure is. There sure is. I told a story about Socrates, and Socrates taught his young men, who were the children of the legislators of the Senate, and he taught them, think for yourself. Think things through, come to your own conclusions. Don't take conclusions just because other people give them to you or just because other people tell you it's law. Think for yourself. And so, as Socrates was teaching this to the boys, it came up that one of the boys said, excuse me, one of the boys said, the legislature has come up with a rule that every woman who has a child that she doesn't want is not allowed to abort the child. If the woman were attacked by a criminal or something and she didn't want the child that she had, she could not abort it. And so the boys were talking about this with Socrates, and Socrates says, what do you think about that? And the boy said, well, the law says it. The rules say it. That's what it's got to be. And then Socrates said, now what if it were your sister? What if your sister were attacked and your dad's on the legislature? What do you think should be done? Well, then, of course, she should have the permission to do it. You know, because who wants to have a child of a convict, you know? And they didn't realize what we know today. But they went to their dads and they told them.
But what they told their father was, Socrates said that we should think for ourselves, and that if we think that abortion is good, then we should do it. And we should be allowed to do it, whether the legislator says it or not. No, Socrates didn't say that at all. He taught them to think. And because he taught them to think, and because of that, that one act put him in prison. Now, and then he took Hemlock and killed him, because he could have left the country, but he just stood up for principle. Hey, I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. And so he died. But all because these kids were thinking for themselves, but they weren't thinking completely. They didn't realize that they were going to mess up their teacher, who they respected very much. They didn't realize that the things they tell their dad, you can't just say that like that, because the legislator thinks that they are above everything. And because they think they are, that the children worship them too. But the children didn't realize the legislators can be just as naughty as anybody else. And unfortunately, sometimes they are. Did that answer for you?
Yes.
Good. Someone. Anybody else? Now that we're done?
No? I had a mob.
What?
I was a second.
You? Yeah. What is your question?
I said that my junior school.
Now, you told me you could talk loud and clear. Now, please do.
Yes, I always talk loud. I said in my junior school days, I used to have a mug, this drinking mug, that has an inscription to know is nothing, than to imagine is everything. Can you throw more light to it?
That's your question.
Yes.
And her question repeated?
To know is nothing.
To imagine.
Is everything.
To know is nothing, to imagine is everything. Now, what is it? You could have said that out loud. There's nothing secret about that. Now, to know is the ability to be perceptive to your own inner self. To imagine means you're perceptive to the universal consciousness, to the universal allness, to all the possibilities that could be. Follow me? If you are imaginative, you are able to create a spaceship. Now, there may never have been a spaceship before. What is it that's going to take the spaceship and put it up? How are they going to do these things? How are they going to put rockets in it? How are they going to how are they going to put people in the spaceship and have people come back to Earth alive? How are they going to accomplish all these things? I mean, that takes a lot of wizardry, a lot of imagination. And of all things, our scientists are the greatest imaginers in the whole world. Our scientists are the most far out people, because they're thinking about things that doesn't presently exist in their world. They're thinking about things that nobody has ever done before. They're using imagination, and they're being utterly fantastic in every way. Yes, it's great. Good question, good point. Okay. Howdy, anybody else? Very good. All right, we call it a lesson, and we'll come back at 2, and we'll continue to share our wisdom and genius, especially from you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now look. This thing still turned on. How would you like it if somebody listened to a talk that you had just given and then the audience went like this? Now, come on. Let's show what you really mean. Let's go.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? If you're going to play the game all the way, because the game is fun. Yeah.